The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Welcome to Crime Prevention 101. We're so happy you joined us this week. Over the next hour, you'll learn the tips, tricks, and vital information that will help you keep yourself confident and safe. Now, here's your host, Susan Bartlestone.
Remember the old song that starts off, "Hot town, summer in the city, back of my neck getting dirty and gritty." No, I'm not a singer. Well, we're deep into summer, and the weather's been hot and steamy here in New York City, the scene of the crime, I call it. And this is just perfect weather for going to the beach, or lounging by the pool, or just curling up somewhere in the shade with something great to read. So I'm finally going to get away for a bit of vacation, but I have a dilemma. I still don't know what books, and I'm not a Kindler, I'm a book person, I still don't know what books I'm going to take with me on vacation. Maybe you procrastinate and you have the same dilemma that I do. So I thought I'd invite some of my favorite guest authors to come back on the show, as well as some authors whose books sounded interesting to me, and maybe they can help me put my reading list together. Now, of course, everyone has different tastes, but here on Crime Prevention 1, we are drawn to read about crime. But whatever it is that you like, I've got a great lineup of guests for you, and maybe they can give you some suggestions that will help you while away the summer days. I'm Susan Bartlestone. This is Crime Prevention 101. And if it's hot where you are, why not spend a refreshing hour with me as we take a dip into the literary pool on the show tonight? But first, I just got to talk about that ever-perplexing Jorn Vandersloot, and I call him Jorn, Jorn Vandersloot, all the murky water that he's been dredging up. This guy just gets sleazier and crazier all the time. And to help me make sense of it, I've invited former star prosecutor and well-known TV crime analyst and one half of Justice Interrupted, Robin Sachs, to come back on Crime Prevention 101 to help me understand what's going on here. And Robin, hi there. Welcome back.
Hi, good morning.
Well, this case has so many twists and turns to it. There's always a new surprise coming out. This guy's a spickle. He's a liar. What's going on here?
Oh, God, you've nailed it, and many more adjectives to come from there. And this is somebody who is an unbelievable narcissist, an unbelievably deceptive individual, and someone who just can't seem to help himself or get out of his own way if his life depended on it. And his life is depending on it right now. And here we're dealing with the case right now in Peru with the murder of Stephanie Flores. And as we've seen the case unfold in the last couple of weeks, what we saw was at first what appeared to be an opportunity for Jorn to seek leniency by providing information, confess, perhaps doing a reenactment and so forth in order to perhaps qualify for the leniency under the Peruvian law, which would subject him to less than 35 years in state prison. And from a prosecutor's point of view, and a victim's advocate point of view, I was mortified at that possibility and was kind of thrilled that he became less cooperative, because the less cooperative, then the less chance of leniency. And I don't think it will make much of a difference in terms of the provability of his case, because he is a known liar, and you know, the evidence speaks for itself, and he's placed at the scene, and his DNA is all over the place, and there's blood, and her, you know, and if his DNA is under her fingernails, and even more proof there. So, you know, even though he's you know, the greatest train wreck in the world to watch, there's always that fear that, you know, can he get away with it as he seemed to have in the Natalie Holloway case?
Right, and I was just going to bring that up. This is where we first heard this guy's name, because he was a person of interest. I don't know if they call him that down in Aruba, but he was one of the people that were mentioned in the Natalie Holloway case, and he got off on that one.
Yeah, well, he's not even just mentioned. I mean, he's confessed at least three times to the killing of Natalie Holloway, and has taunted the family, even most recently this last week, with the extradition request from, I believe, Atlanta, where he has, you know, tried to extort money from the Holloway family in exchange for information as to where Natalie's body is. So, you know, he was written off as a false confessor, but there's no false confession there in my mind.
And this is really this is pretty horrible what he's doing, because the family, Natalie Holloway's family, wants to have some closure on this, and he keeps trying to extort money and taunting them, and then he'll tell them where the body is, and then he changes his mind, he won't do it. I mean, this is really horrible. This is some kind of immoral, you know, bastard here.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that's the thing. It's not bad enough that he appears to be a serial killer, perhaps even someone who has, been a sexually violent predator of sorts. We don't know, because the evidence never seems to, well, for at least in the Natalie Holloway case, we don't have Natalie's body to be able to perform an autopsy, and we don't know in the details, even though we think that, you know, the confession's true, the details are not necessarily so. We know that defendants all the time use self-serving mechanisms, but here you have somebody who was even perceived and given the benefit of the doubt in terms of Natalie Holloway, of being perhaps a murder that was a necessitated murder, if you will. It's not obviously a necessity, but where she may have, OD'd on alcohol, gotten sick, and he panicked, as he had suggested, and then he didn't know what to do and didn't help her, but it wasn't necessarily a violent crime that was specifically intended for the death of Natalie, as opposed to what we're seeing here in the Stephanie Flores case, where it seems, you know, very calculated, obviously out of a fit of anger. But just by putting those two pieces together, we are definitely now dealing with someone who is serial, because the definition of serial is really something about the numbers of times left without mindset.
Now, he's going to be tried in Peru for this, correct?
Correct.
And I'm told that the jails in Peru are especially harsh.
Yeah.
So if that's the case, I maybe that will help Natalie Holloway's family if he does get sent to someplace that's not going to be a country club for him.
Right. Well, that is, you know, the the hope, kind of the silver lining of, you know, the unspoken part of the justice system, of the consequences that feel good. And there is this feeling of, okay, well, you know, at least Peruvian jails are known to be the worst of the worst, and there's the potential that he won't, you know, make it through custody there. And, you know, hopefully he'll be as ill regarded in custody as he is out of custody by the rest of us. But I don't think that is even going to even touch upon closure for the Holloway family. They've been, they want to know, where is she? What really happened? And then have him be able to be held accountable. Then you start talking closure.
And he's really, who would believe anything he says at this point? I mean, it's
right.
been very
That's
hard
the
to...
problem.
Yeah. All right,
unless
Robin,
it's corroborated by the evidence. I mean, that's how they would know, is if they, you know, if what he says and then leads them to her body and the body's there, then we may start getting some more. We'll never get to the entire story, and I don't think in any case you ever get to the entire story, unfortunately.
Very true, and we're going to keep following this case, and maybe you'll come back on when there are some new developments and we'll talk about it.
I would be happy to.
Now, the theme of the show today is, what books to take to the summer, take to the beach for summer reading? And you are also an author. And now, there are people who don't necessarily want to spend just leisure time. They want to read productively. And you got three books here that look very informative, talking about your experiences as a sex crime DA and talking about child molesters, right? And there's another one about what it's like being a sex crime DA. And right, and Complete Idiot's Guide to the Criminal Justice System.
That's right.
So for those that can't spend their time frivolously, that have to be productive, these are three great books that you might want to take with you. Robin, give out your website that you prefer to have people go to.
It's Robin Sachs, just spelled like my name, R-O-B-I-N, Sachs, S-A-X.com.
And she's got a great newsletter called Sachs Facts that you can sign up for also.
Thank you.
Yes, Robin. Thanks again. Always a pleasure.
Likewise.
We're going to do
have
it again.
Have a great, great holiday. Take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you so much. All right. Now, this is Crime Prevention 101, the radio show with an optimistic perspective on a sober subject. Coming up next, we're going to get a front row seat at the notorious Amanda Knox trial and hear the real story behind this twisted and lurid case.
News. Opinion. Hear me.
Your voice counts. Call toll-free 1-866-472-5787. 1-866-472-5787. VoiceAmerica.com. After more than 17 years' experience teaching safety skills to thousands of women and men, crime prevention and personal safety expert Susan Bartlestone concluded that by thinking and responding quickly, ideally within 20 seconds, potentially violent criminal encounters can be prevented. Using techniques from many different disciplines and illustrated by 60 real-life examples and success stories, Susan shows how it's done in her new book, Think Fast and Prevent a Violent Crime, How to Respond to Danger in 20 Seconds or Less. Check out www.crimeprevention101.com for more information.
Hi, this is Susan Bartlestone, host of Crime Prevention 101, and I want to tell you about My Mobile Witness, a revolutionary service that transforms your camera phone into a personal safety device. My Mobile Witness believes safety is improved when you remove anonymity from dangerous scenarios. If you're in a stalking situation, for example, if you have an order of protection against someone, or if your profession places you in situations that are potentially dangerous, I want you to check out My Mobile Witness. And you parents of college students, ask the school to check out the My Mobile Witness University program with custom-tailored options aimed at keeping both students and faculty safe. Every campus could benefit from the My Mobile Witness University service. For more information, go to mymobilewitness.com.
Are you sick and tired of get-rich-quick schemes and quick solution promises? There are countless droves of so-called experts who will offer to help you invest in anything from real estate to personal fitness, but at a premium price. Host Dave Lindahl offers a different approach, a personal one. Dave can show you how anyone, in any situation, can start making money wherever they are through his coaching and education. All you have to do to get started is tune in. Dave Lindahl's Creative Success Alliance, Tuesdays at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, noon Pacific, on the Voice America Variety Channel. Streaming live, the leader in Internet talk radio, VoiceAmerica.com. You're listening to Crime Prevention 101 with Susan Bartlestone. We invite you to share your stories, tips, or suggestions for topics you'd like us to cover, and Susan will address some of these on future shows. Send your story or idea to solutions at fightsafe.com. That email address again is solutions at fightsafe.com. Now back to Crime Prevention 101 with Susan Bartlestone.
Hi, Susan Bartlestone here. Plenty of show left, so why not send your best buddies a tweet about us? Send them a text. Give them an email. There's so many ways to get the word out. And don't forget that you can follow me on Twitter and on Facebook, and I have over 4,000 friends now. I'd love to have you join me. All right, so now, there's one more book that I am sure that I want to read, and that's the book about Amanda Knox. So let's go talk to Candace Dempsey. And Candace is an award-winning Italian-American journalist. She's a true crime blogger. She's a travel writer. She's based out in Seattle, one of the cities I definitely want to get to. Now, she reported on the Amanda Knox case for CNN Headline News, Como TV, which is an ABC affiliate. She's done this for Italian television. Her book is called Murder in Italy, The Shocking Slaying of a British Student, the Accused American Girl, and an International Scandal. Sounds so fascinating. All right, so Candace, welcome to Crime Prevention 101.
Thank you. Good morning.
Now, you've been called the sweet voice of reason in a cacophony of abusive ranting, screaming for blood. Wow. This trial really caused a media frenzy. What? Tell us, for those who don't know about this trial, give us some background on the trial.
Well, they called it the trial of the century, and it ran for 11 months. And it ran for about 11 months on the weekends and a couple times a month. And every time Amanda Knox would come into court, it would create a big frenzy. There would be millions of cameras around, and there's a lot of people who are polarized on this issue. Like, a lot of people think that she's guilty. A lot of people think that she's innocent. And there aren't very many people that are in the middle on that.
Mm-hmm.
So that created a media frenzy. Plus, you have the fascinating internationalities involved. Amanda's American. Her ex-Italian boyfriend, who's supposed to be a co-conspirator, of course, is Italian. And then we have a young man from the Ivory Coast. So it just all came together this way, and around a theory that they had killed Amanda's British roommate over sex and drugs.
That's correct. So let's just back up a second. So these Amanda Knox and Meredith Kircher were in college. They had gone to Perugia, Italy, correct?
Right. They were both
to go to college.
Yeah, they
go to college.
Didn't know each other beforehand. So they were both young women studying abroad, and they answered an ad for a room for rent in a beautiful cottage outside the city walls of Perugia, which is a hilltop town.
Mm-hmm.
And they had two other Italian roommates. So there are four girls who lived in one flat.
So now, what were the circumstances of the murder?
Well, Meredith was stabbed to death one day after Halloween. So she wasn't really in Perugia very long. Either was Amanda. And they didn't actually know each other that well. And nobody knows.
Like a month. This had been like a month and a half or something.
Right. It was a month and a half for Meredith. I think a little bit. It's almost 2 months for Meredith and about a month and a half for Amanda. But they didn't know each other before. So no one knows exactly what happened, but Meredith was going to spend the night alone in the cottage. It was a holiday weekend, and all the other roommates were gone. And Amanda has said that she was with her boyfriend at a different house that night. So Meredith was the only person there at the cottage spending the night, planning to spend the night. And she was stabbed to death sometime during that night. And even the time of death is still in flux. We're constantly seeing it moved around by the prosecutor. So,
now, where did this Rudy, I think his name is Guede?
Yes.
Right. And he was from he's an Italian immigrant. He's from the Ivory Coast. Now, where did he figure into this?
Well, he knew both girls vaguely because he played basketball with Meredith's boyfriend, and he had been introduced to them at one occasion. And he, from what we appears to be, that he didn't have any money, that he was kind of drifting. He was only 20 years old at the time of the murders, 20 or 21, and nobody knows that much about him. Some people say he was a small-time drug dealer. But the prosecutor has linked him with the two college students in this group conspiracy crime. And that's because his DNA was found in ample portions all over the house, his handprints, his footprints, shoe prints, all over the house. So all of the evidence, you know, the points towards him in the murder room, for example, they haven't really found any traces of Amanda. And for Raffaele, just one little tiny trace on a broadcloth.
And now, Raffaele...
Solicito, that's Amanda's boyfriend. It gets confusing, I know. There are a lot of people involved in this plot. It makes it a fascinating mystery for that reason.
And from what I think I read, that he was like barely her boyfriend. She had met him like a week or two before this whole event happened.
Yeah, so they had known each other for only 6 days.
6 days?
Yes. And they met at a classical musical concert.
I wouldn't even call him a boyfriend. I mean, he'd still be a date if I knew him for 6 days. Well, he's,
right. And then, of course, he said that he's never met Rudy. And Rudy said the same thing. They never met before they met in court, finally. And so that's what the theory is, that these two people who knew each other for only 6 days left Raffaele's apartment that night, went over to the cottage, and with Rudy, killed Meredith.
And this was supposed to have happened, some kind of an orgy, or what were they actually doing at that time, supposedly?
Well, the theory keeps changing, but Meredith's bedroom is this tiny thing the size of a tablecloth, and supposedly four people were in there struggling. And how they got into the room is the key, because in journalism, I was always taught that you can't call someone a murderer if you can't put them in the murder room. And they've actually mm-hmm. never been placed there by evidence. Rudy has been, but the other two have not. And so what the prosecutor believes, or I guess what the jury believed, is something different than the prosecutor. That's confusing, too. But the jury believed that that Meredith was in her room, and Amanda had invited Rudy over, and Rudy went and started bothering Meredith, and then Raffaele and Amanda, that was a turn-on for them, and they ran into the room and started, you know, playing around with knives, and that they didn't intend to kill, maybe, we don't know, but that Meredith was killed during that time.
Hmm. So she wasn't dating this Rudy at all? I mean,
She just met him on one occasion. The same with Meredith. They met him on the same night. And Meredith's boyfriend introduced them. So,
oh, she had a boyfriend.
Yes, she was dating one of the boys. It's a big house, and there's four people upstairs, four down. So there are four Italian boys living downstairs, and Meredith was dating one of them. So ordinarily, she would have been very safe, but it was a holiday weekend, and all the Italians had gone home to their families or off visiting or traveling.
Hmm. Now, one of the things that kind of fueled all this controversy, besides the fact that there are so many different countries involved. Now, Amanda Knox was an honor student in
America. Yes, she was,
America.
At the University of Washington here in Seattle.
She looks, if you see pictures of her, she looks like the most naive, innocent little kid.
She was 20 at the time. And that's what makes the plot so fascinating, is the difference between her angel face, as the Italians call her, and the brutal crime. And the contrast between her face and what she's accused of doing drives a lot of the plot, that's for sure.
Yeah, they made a lot of that. And they also,
yes.
She evidently didn't appear to take this all that seriously. She must have been pretty convinced she'd be found innocent, because there are all these reports of her coming in and laughing and, you know, mugging for the cameras and, you know, doing all these kind of strange things instead of, you know, sort of trying to make herself believable and upset about what had gone on. I mean, did you find that a factor?
Well, I certainly think that she did some things after the body was discovered that were kind of unusual, to put it mildly. But
what
I didn't really think her demeanor in court was as portrayed, because she only smiled like that when she turned to look at her family members. And that was just during a brief period when the cameras were allowed in. They weren't allowed in the entire time. So when you see Amanda Knox, it's always during the break. And so she's not sitting there in court and laughing at the evidence or anything like that. But you do see her turning to smile at her sister or her family members. And she's only allowed to see them a couple hours a week. So when she's in court, she actually sees them more than she usually does.
Yeah.
So I felt like there wasn't really much that she could do to make herself likable in court, because if she didn't react, then people would say, oh, she's got a guilty conscience, look at her, she's mm-hmm. all depressed because she knows she's guilty, and or she's on drugs. Or so there really was no demeanor that she could find that worked for her in court. And
now,
Go ahead.
What were the unusual things, the bizarre things that she did when she found the body? And she claims that she found the body.
Well, they were led to they led police to the body, basically. And so mm-hmm. after the body was discovered, all the young people who were in the house at the time were told to get out of the house. And while they were outside the house, Amanda and Raffaele kissed briefly. And so unfortunately for them, there were video photographers there, and they videotaped them kissing. So that was the first thing. And then when they went to the police station that night, Amanda was, you know, smiling at her boyfriend and being very flirtatious with him, at a time when other people were sobbing all around her. And but she also, we found out later, was crying herself at different periods. It's just that she didn't cry in public. And so that really counted against her, the fact that, the police didn't see her crying.
Mm. Well, now, do you feel she got a fair trial?
Well, I think that I'm a practical person, so I look at it as, was justice done? And justice means that the right person was put in jail and that kind of thing. So
okay.
That's what I'm on the fence about. And that fair trial, I mean, she was given all the rights that any other person would have gotten in the Italian courts. So, I mean, it's fair in that sense. But you have to wonder about the verdict, and that's why it's on appeal now. So it will be interesting to find out what stands up on appeal and what doesn't. But she does get
now,
automatic appeals.
She was sentenced to 26 years in prison.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So the boyfriend...
He got 25.
25 years. Now, the other fellow, Rudy Gede...
Rudy got 30 years originally, and then he opted for what they call the fast-track trial, and that means that you go through this fast thing where they can't introduce new evidence and that kind of thing. And so
mm-hmm.
he chose to do that. And so he got 30 years. He wasn't tried at the same time as they were, in other words. He's already been on appeal, and he got from 30 to 16.
All right. Well, this is a fascinating story. This is a fascinating book. It's called Murder in Italy. And, Candace, give out your website.
Yes, it's CandaceDempsey.com. And you
Candace
has my Twitter and my blog. You can get the links to all my other things there.
She's got a great blog, too. And can people get this on Kindle if they want to?
Yes, it's also a Kindle. Yep.
All right, fantastic. All right, I'm putting this down on my list. Thank you so much for being with me. What a fascinating read.
It was a pleasure. Thank you.
Oh, same here. All right, when we come back, let's put a little testosterone into the mix. We've got the handsome and brilliant author, as he calls himself, Burl Barra, who's joining me, and we like him because we never know what he's going to say or do.
Ask the experts. Call toll-free right now, 1-866-472-5787.
Hello?
And ask our all-star team to answer your question. That's 1-866-472-5787.
Thank you for calling.
VoiceAmerica.com. After more than 17 years' experience teaching safety skills to thousands of women and men, crime prevention and personal safety expert Susan Bartlestone concluded that by thinking and responding quickly, ideally within 20 seconds, potentially violent criminal encounters can be prevented. Using techniques from many different disciplines and illustrated by 60 real-life examples and success stories, Susan shows how it's done in her new book, Think Fast and Prevent a Violent Crime, how to respond to danger in 20 seconds or less. Check out www.crimeprevention101.com for more information.
Hi, this is Susan Bartlestone, host of Crime Prevention 101, and I want to tell you about My Mobile Witness, a revolutionary service that transforms your camera phone into a personal safety device. My Mobile Witness believes safety is improved when you remove anonymity from dangerous scenarios. If you're in a stalking situation, for example, if you have an order of protection against someone, or if your profession places you in situations that are potentially dangerous, I want you to check out My Mobile Witness. And you parents of college students, ask the school to check out the My Mobile Witness University program with custom-tailored options aimed at keeping both students and faculty safe. Every campus could benefit from the My Mobile Witness University service. For more information, go to mymobilewitness.com.
If you want to get ahead, you have to stand out from the crowd, the clutter, and the competition. Are you? Tune in each week for Standing Out with Lauren Saunier. Lauren and her guests have the secrets that can help you and your business get noticed, get attention, and achieve your desired results no matter where you're starting from. Standing Out with Lauren Saunier, live every Friday at 12 noon Eastern Time, 9 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Business Channel. Get ready to be a marketing machine. The Internet's number one talk station. Number one talk station. VoiceAmerica.com. You're listening to Crime Prevention 101 with Susan Bartlestone. We invite you to share your stories, tips, or suggestions for topics you'd like us to cover, and Susan will address some of these on future shows. Send your story or idea to solutions@fightsafe.com. That email address again is solutions@fightsafe.com. Now, back to Crime Prevention 101 with Susan Bartlestone.
This is Crime Prevention 101. I'm Susan Bartlestone, and I want to welcome Burl Barra back, his second appearance on Crime Prevention 101. He is an Edgar Award-winning author. He writes fiction and nonfiction. His books have been translated into 7 languages. Now, one critic said that Burl Barra is obviously twisted. Another said he was like Sue Grafton on PCP. I love him. Welcome back, Burl.
It's a pleasure to be here. Someone also described me as an encyclopedia of falling down a flight of stairs. I rather like that one as well.
All right. Well, now, Burl, I want you to help me make up my summer reading list as I'm heading off to the beach. You've written a lot of books, Burl. A lot of books. All right. Well, so what should we talk about first? What's the first thing I should put into my book bag?
Well, if you want something cheap, easy, and I'm not referring to me, but one of my books, although it might apply, you could pick this one up for like as little as a penny because it's out of print, and the mailing charges are cheap. Book called Headlock, you know, like a wrestler puts you in, and it's a private eye novel, vastly entertaining, that I wrote starring me because I figured I deserved to be the star of one of my own books. Obviously, it's fiction. A paranoid recluse hires Private Eye Jeff Reynolds, that's me, to find out if it's safe to come out of the house. The answer is no, it's not safe at all. But it's got wonderful reviews worldwide. People found it vastly entertaining, and I think I made a grand total of $57 off of it. And because it's out of print, I'm still not going to make any money off of it, but you will really enjoy it, and you can pick it up online for literally as little as a dollar or a penny as a library book discard and just pay shipping and handling, about $2-3. So it's a great deal. It's wonderful summer reading, and it's got some good laughs in it. Go ahead.
I was going to ask, I read the description of it and it sounded hilarious. So I'm put, all right, that's going on my list. Especially for a penny, I like it.
All now, right, if you want something that's if you want something that's not funny, you may want to pick up and if you like serial killers, I mean, not like his personal friends, but his subject matter, you may want to pick up the book Body Count, the horrifying true story of the Spokane serial killer, Robert Lee Yates, who began murdering people, at an early age and kept it up as a regular hobby for several years. If you really want to get depressed, this summer, I have a book entitled Broken Doll about the fellow who, the family friend who crawls through the bedroom window of 7-year-old Roxanne Doll, kidnaps her, rapes her, murders her, and then comes back and goes camping with the father who doesn't know this has happened to his daughter.
I hear these similar kind of themes, and I know they're true, but oh God, you just never can get your, I can't wrap my head around that one.
The fellow who did it, if you read the book, of course, you'll get the entire story of his life also. And probably the only real difference between his life and the life of his victim was that he was still alive. He suffered horribly. In fact, you can tell in reading the story at exactly what age and what moment of his life the emotional walls came down. And you can even pinpoint the exact time, the exact incident. And as crime prevention goes, and that is the title of your show, I say, well, even the police will say, don't turn to us to stop crimes. We're only there to arrest people.
Correct. Mostly.
Yeah, if you want to stop violent crime, stop violence in the home. Is it in an American home or in any home, if there is violence, the male is 1,000 times more likely to beat his wife if you when it grows up and gets married. If there's violence in the home, whatever kind, the woman or the young girl is 600 times more likely to beat her husband. So it's never an issue. You know, you get a lot of that. You had Susan Murphy Milano on recently, coming on. She's a great friend of mine. Wonderful.
Oh, she was. That was a wonderful show. That was a couple of weeks ago. That show, but
she's fantastic. And as you probably know, every 18 seconds, a woman in this country suffers from domestic violence. If that is true, which I believe it is, that means the difference between violence against women and violence against men is 3 seconds. Because the same study that shows every 18 seconds a woman is a victim of domestic violence, the same study shows that every 15 seconds a man is a victim of domestic violence.
Well, Burl, that's all well and true, but I'll tell you what, I'm heading off to the beach here, so I want to maybe leave a little
bit
of that.
In that case, you don't want to have beach violence. So I suggest that you avoid dressing in a bathing suit, because that will only attract attention.
Hold on. Let's get serious here for a minute. There is a book that you wrote that would be a great beach book, and that was The History of the Saint. Now you are.
Oh yes! If you like the famous Simon Templar, The Devil with Dames, The Headache of Cops and Crooks Alike, then you can sit back, relax, and read all about every incarnation of the saint, from radio, television, print, film, comic books, trading cards, fully illustrated, and the complete history of the character and all the movies and all the TV shows. And it's out now in paperback with a full-color cover with Roger Moore on the front looking saintly.
That's
from McFarland and Company. And it may cost you more than a few other paperbacks, but it's bigger, longer, stronger, and big enough that you can shield body parts from sunburn.
Oh, nice. So it's got a protective aspect, too. I like
it. Certainly does.
I like it.
Yeah.
And this, you call Leslie Charteris, it's called the Robin Hood of Modern Crime, Simon Templar, from 1928 to 1992.
Yes, as a matter of fact, that covers quite a stretch. I was just contacted by the publisher recently, and we're going to be doing an updated version of Volume 2 because there's been a lot of things happened since 1992 to the present, including I'm sitting here writing a Saint television screenplay right now for a pilot we're going to shoot in New Orleans in a few months for a new Saint TV series.
Lovely. That's wonderful, because that happens to have been one of my absolute favorite series. I happen to like it better in the black and white than when it was in the
color.
Yes,
me also. Yes, I have the black and whites and the color. I was just watching season 3 in black and white last night.
And
how about
Leslie
that amazing question?
Leslie Charteris was an interesting character, too. That wasn't his real name. Correct.
Well, actually, it was legally his real name because he had it changed when he was probably about college age. But the interesting thing is when he tried to become was an American citizen. But when he first tried to become an American citizen, he couldn't. It was against the law. We had in America the Chinese Exclusion Act. If you had any Chinese blood in you, you were not allowed to become an American citizen. It took an act of Congress for Leslie Charteris to become an American because his father was Chinese.
Unbelievable.
Yes, we had the Chinese come here and build the railroad, then we deported them all and made it illegal for Chinese to become American citizens. Fortunately, we've changed the law since then.
And who was Charteris? Where did he get that name from?
Well, that's a could have got it from a historical character who had supposedly the Hellfire Club in London at one time. His real name was, I believe, Leslie Charles Boyer Yin. His father was a very wealthy, famous Chinese surgeon. His mother was a English woman. He traveled around the world, I think, 3 times before he was 10 years old. Quite an ex, could speak several languages. I met him 2 weeks to the day before he passed away.
Oh,
and
wow.
They bought me lunch. He bought me lunch at a little coffee shop in Surrey.
Thanks.
And he very first words out of his mouth were, he says, how can that fellow concentrate on making a same movie with Sharon Stone in his bed? Because at that time, the producer was smooshing up Sharon Stone.
All right, well, you know what, girl? We did it again. It was so much fun speaking with you. Now, your website is BarrerBarer.net. You can also catch Burl on, he's got his own radio show, Outlaw. What's the website for the radio?
The Outlaw Crime, all one word, outlawcrime.com.
Outlawcrime.com. And I am going to be a guest on outlawcrime.com. Can't wait for that.
That'll be very exciting. We'll do all sorts of strange, rude things to you. It'll be quite fun.
Absolutely. And please give Magic Matt a big kiss for me when you see him next. All right?
Yes, I'll see him Saturday.
All right. Now, this is Crime Prevention 101 now. Stay right where you are. When we come back, you'll meet a woman who's been described as an author of teen intelligence, an exceptional journalistic dexterity, who has a flair for the emotionally raw. Nice.
Talk, talk, talk. That's all we do is talk.
Yeah!
If you'd like to talk, call us toll-free right now at 1-866-472-5787. 1-866-472-5787.
That's it.
VoiceAmerica.com. After more than 17 years' experience teaching safety skills to thousands of women and men, crime prevention and personal safety expert Susan Bartlestone concluded that by thinking and responding quickly, ideally within 20 seconds, potentially violent criminal encounters can be prevented. Using techniques from many different disciplines and illustrated by 60 real-life examples and success stories, Susan shows how it's done in her new book, Think Fast and Prevent a Violent Crime, how to respond to danger in 20 seconds or less. Check out www.crimeprevention101.com for more information.
Emotional intelligence has been documented to be the most important skill for a leader to move up in an organization. Leader's Playbook will unpack what emotional intelligence is, why it is important, and how you can raise your emotional intelligence for yourself, your direct reports, and your team. Join Dr. Relly Nadler every Monday morning at 9 a.m. Pacific, 12 p.m. Eastern, to the Leader's Playbook on the Voice America Business Channel. Your success could depend on it.
Hi, this is Susan Bartlestone, host of Crime Prevention 101, and I want to tell you about My Mobile Witness, a revolutionary service that transforms your camera phone into a personal safety device. My Mobile Witness believes safety is improved when you remove anonymity from dangerous scenarios. If you're in a stalking situation, for example, if you have an order of protection against someone, or if your profession places you in situations that are potentially dangerous, I want you to check out My Mobile Witness. And you parents of college students, ask the school to check out the My Mobile Witness University program with custom-tailored options aimed at keeping both students and faculty safe. Every campus could benefit from the My Mobile Witness University service. For more information, go to mymobilewitness.com.
Stimulating talk
gets those synapses in the brain firing really fast.
All the time. The number one internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com.
You're listening to Crime Prevention 101 with Susan Bartlestone. We invite you to share your stories, tips, or suggestions for topics you'd like us to cover, and Susan will address some of these on future shows. Send your story or idea to solutions@fightsafe.com. That email address again is solutions@fightsafe.com. Now, back to Crime Prevention 101 with Susan Bartlestone.
Hello again. This is Susan Bartlestone. Don't forget that Crime Prevention 101 is available on iTunes. You don't even have to be at your computer to listen to me. And make sure to check out my blog, crimeprevention101.com, where I post links and information about show topics and my wonderful guests. And please don't forget that we'd love to hear from you. Post your comments and suggestions on my host page at voiceamerica.com. And make sure to tell your friends about us, too. Now, my next guest, Caitlin Rother, is a Pulitzer-nominated investigative journalist who worked at daily newspapers for 19 years before she quit to write books full-time in 2006. She's the author of 5 books, both fiction and nonfiction, the most recent of which is going to be released in 2011, and she's a regular blogger on my favorite blog, Incold Blog. So, hi, Caitlin.
Hello.
Now, Caitlin, this is your second time with me, and last time that you were on the show, you talked about your book, Body Parts.
Uh-huh.
And now, I'm trying to put my book list together to go to the beach.
Uh-huh.
So let's talk about some of your other books that might make good summer reading, and especially for those who like true crime.
Okay.
Can we start with Naked Addiction? That looks so interesting.
Okay, great. It's actually, this one is fiction, but it's mm-hmm. great for beach reading because it literally takes place at the beach. It's about sex, drugs, and murder, and it's a thriller, and it's set in La Jolla in Pacific Beach, where I grew up. So it's a Detective Ken Good is an undercover narcotics detective, and he really wants to be a homicide detective. So he's been working as on the relief teams, and he comes across the body of this beautiful young woman in an alley, and he becomes the head of a relief team to investigate her death. Now, the thing is, she's beautiful, and she looks just like his mother, who committed suicide in front of him when he was 6 years old.
Oh, wow. What a great idea.
Jumping off the Coronado Bridge. And if any of you have been to San Diego, if you're on the East Coast, Coronado Bridge is this landmark here. So there are many, you know, landmarks here that people would recognize if you're not from here. And so it's just a really fun, good read, and it's spicy, and it's got lots of twists and turns. And it was my first book, actually. It took me 17 years to get published, so it's one of my favorites. And most everybody who's read it has liked it. And, in fact, I've been told that people actually put it down. They're so sad it's about to end, they want to make it last. So.
Ooh. I think I see a sequel then.
I've been working on one, yes. So.
Oh, excellent. Excellent.
So the others are all nonfiction.
Okay.
So the next one that I would like to mention is Poisoned Love. Now, Poisoned Love has a similar theme, which is sex, drugs, and murder. It also takes place in La Jolla, only this one is true.
Mm-hmm.
So there's this beautiful young toxicologist named Kristen Rossum, and she made headlines. She was on national shows, and a number of documentaries have been made about this case on the E! Channel and Oxygen Network, and I've been on a couple of them, actually. She was a beautiful toxicologist in the medical examiner's office here. She was also a meth addict. So she was a rising star, and she was in great shape when she was clean, but she started using again. And her husband, who had helped her get off meth initially when they had met, ends up dead in his bed with red rose petals sprinkled over him. And she claims, oh, he committed suicide because he was depressed that I was leaving him. Well, it turns out she's been having an affair with her boss. She's using meth in the office. She's stealing drugs from the office. And
but this is a true story.
This is all true. Lo and behold, these drugs that were stolen from the medical examiner's office end up in her husband's body. So that's Poison Love.
Did she go to trial for this?
She's convicted. She's in prison for the rest of her life.
What was the thing with the rose petals? Just like a little touch?
Her favorite movie was American Beauty. Now, so American Beauty is, you know, the name of that red rose, and that movie has red rose petals, if you remember, coming down from the ceiling. And so she must have gotten some wacky idea while she was high on meth, thinking that this is something that a man would look like he would do, you know?
Mm.
But it really was more of a feminine touch, and that's one of the reasons why she got caught, so...
Yeah, I'm thinking, because that's really weird.
Yeah.
Very, very, you know, I mean, it's these strange little things that just make you scratch your head. Like, why
would she do that? And I say, well, you know, people on meth really aren't thinking very rationally.
Mm. Well, true.
Yeah.
That is true.
Yeah. So then the next one.
Interesting one, yeah.
Is Twisted Triangle. Now.
Okay, now this looked very spicy.
Yes.
This looks very, very spicy.
Have you read it?
No, I didn't, but I read the description of it when I went to... And by the way, we should mention that some of these are on Kindle, I think, right?
Yes, they are, actually, and I don't have them all memorized, but I know some of them are also on the Nook. Twisted Triangle, right. I know, is on the Nook as well.
Because I got to tell you, I'm a book person. I'm not a Kindler, but I know there's a lot of my listeners that like it that way, you know. And you can download it.
Yes, Poison Love, I believe, is on Kindle, but that publisher likes to have it out in hard copy for a few years before they do that. So, anyway, Twisted Triangle is about a kidnapping and an attempted murder and a lesbian love triangle involving two FBI agents, Margot and Jean Bennett, and famous crime novelist Patricia Cornwell. So if any of you are Patricia Cornwell fans, you might enjoy this one, although I don't want to oversell that aspect of it. There's one chapter that has an affair between Margot and Patricia Cornwell, but that becomes really the motivation for her husband to go wacky on her. So he supposedly doesn't want his kids raised by a lesbian, you know, so he really doesn't like this idea of his wife leaving him and wanting to be with women. So
and the wife was the FBI agent.
They were both FBI agents. Margot was an instructor at the academy at Quantico, and Jean was an undercover agent, actually a really brilliant, really complicated and intelligent guy, would put together these complex undercover operations and, you know, arrest dozens and dozens of bad guys. And so he ends up concocting this crazy scheme to frame Margot and make her look like she's crazy. And in fact, if it goes wrong, then he's going to be the one who looks crazy. And his defense doesn't end up going very well at trial. But so he's in prison until 2016 for attempting to kill his wife and her minister in a church. So.
Wow, and they got him? They got him too, right?
Yeah, they got him too. But he was never prosecuted for the kidnapping because nobody could believe that he would have kidnapped his own wife. But later, after the attempted murder, then people started believing Margot, and they didn't believe her initially. He grabbed her. He tasered her in the head. He pulled her down in the kitchen and handcuffed her, blindfolded her, stuck her in the trunk of her own car, drove her around for 45 minutes, and then said, you know, if you testify against me at trial, this is when he had committed fraud against the FBI, our children have been kidnapped by Colombian drug lords, and if you testify against me, we'll never see our children again. You know, and anyone who's been tasered in the head five times is a little disoriented, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And she believed him because he'd been kind of beaten her down over the years emotionally. And so, you know, anyway, he got her to start perjuring herself on the stand, saying, oh, well, you know, I guess I wasn't right, you know. And the judge luckily said, oh, well, something's wrong here, and pulled her off, and he ended up going to prison. But he never got in trouble for the kidnapping. So we're all a little worried because 2016 isn't that far away.
Yeah, so that's when he gets out?
Uh-huh.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
She better go into the witness protection program.
Well, she's ready. She's ready for him.
Yeah, okay.
She's tried it a couple times, so she's...
All right. And
I should mention also that that book is going to be featured, and her story is actually going to be featured on the case with Paula Zahn on the 11th, if anyone's interested in watching that.
Nice. Okay. Very nice.
Yeah.
Now, there's a last one here, Where Hope Begins, right?
Yes. Where Hope Begins is the story of TV reporter Alicia Sofios, was covering this case, so the Marcus Wesson case, where he was he comes out of his house in Fresno, and he's covered in blood. He's got long dreadlocks, and the police are outside, and some of his wife's nieces are outside, and they want their kids back. Well, this guy's been conducting kind of a cult-like existence in his family, having kids with his wife and his daughters and her nieces, and there's, you know, like 16 kids in there. And so when the police come on a call by one of the nieces trying to get her kid back, Marcus tells one of his daughters to go into the back bedroom with all the little kids and carry out the suicide pact that he taught them. You know, if the police ever come and try to break up our family, they're not going to understand our lifestyle. You need to shoot all the little kids and then yourself, which is exactly what she did. So there was a pile of 9 dead children in the back bedroom. It was just horrible. And the police, the sad thing is the police were in the front yard the whole time. They said, oh, we didn't even hear any shots. which I find really hard to believe.
Yes,
but anyway,
too.
Alicia gets involved with this family because she's covering this story, and she feels sorry for the female surviving members, the wife, the one of the daughters, and one of the nieces, who had all lost their some children in this murder. But they were brainwashed, and they thought that Marcus Wesson had done nothing wrong. He was a Christ-like figure, and he kept them isolated for years. So it's basically a story of her helping these women kind of survive and recover from this horrible thing, horrible tragedy, and women helping women, you know.
Oh, good.
Yeah. So
well, that is so interesting. Well, Caitlin, you've given me a lot of food for thought here.
Great.
It always goes so quickly with us, and I thank you so much for being...
Well, I thank you so much, too. And if people want to learn more, they can go to my website at caitlinrosser.com, and they can click through and buy those books there if they'd like as well.
Thank you so much, Caitlin.
Thank you for having me.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Well, I hope we've given you a few books that'll make your summer more enjoyable. I'm packing up my bag as soon as I'm off the air, and I'm heading right out the door because, yes, I am now on vacation for a couple of weeks. But you don't have to go without your Crime Prevention 101 fix for that long because for the next 2 weeks, we'll be rerunning past shows that I've gotten a lot of response to over the year or shows that I think bear repeating. And why not take Crime Prevention 101 along to the beach or to the pool with you on your iPod? You can catch up on more past shows, and that should tide you over. But we'll be back live before you know it with more important crime topics and stories that demand to be told. And, of course, lots of tips and resources. So stay tuned and stay safe until I get back.
We hope you got some useful information and inspiration this week on Crime Prevention 101. Susan Bartlestone invites you to join us again next Thursday at 5 p.m. Pacific at 8 p.m. Eastern Time here on Voice America. If you want to learn more about Susan's guests, sign up for her newsletter, or find out about upcoming teleseminars and workshops, go to www.crimeprevention101.com today. Have a great week and a safe week.
Thanks again for listening to the preceding program brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.